From national news in D.C.
to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol,
this is your Capitol Connection.
And now, bringing the Capitol to you,
here's your host, Nate Graz.
And welcome to Capitol Connection. We are broadcasting today from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln, just blocks away from our state capitol, where we are working every day to advance family, freedom, and life. And to keep you informed on the biggest news in government, policy, and culture from a biblical perspective. On today's show, we'll talk about the release of the latest CDC report on abortion in the United States and why it has both good and bad news for America. Plus, we'll give a rundown of pro-life news to be thankful for this year and provide an answer to the question, when does life begin? But first, in talking about this subject today, I want to start with something really interesting, but absolutely fascinating and important that happened this past weekend, where a strong pro-life message reached millions of viewers across America during one of our country's biggest football games of all places. It happened during the Ohio State and Michigan football game, when Fox Sports announcer Gus Johnson let slip some pretty inspiring pro-life personal history about Ohio State's star running back J.K. Dobbins after he had a monster game rushing for over 200 yards and four touchdowns. He's a Heisman candidate. And this is what was said live on air late in the game after J.K. Dobbins scored his fourth touchdown of the day. Take a listen.
211 yards rushing.
What does this kid not do? He's churning the clock out in between the tackles, and then bam, lightning on the outside, the explosiveness to go down and then up and over the top to put that ball over the goal line for a touchdown. What a day for J.K. Dobbins. Absolute dominant performance from Dobbins and this offensive line.
J.K. Dobbins' mom, Maya, became pregnant when she was 18 years old. She went to the doctor because she was thinking about aborting the baby, but changed her mind. That baby turned out to be that young man, J.K. Dobbins, who she calls her miracle baby.
Wow. So it's not very often, or perhaps ever, that you hear something like that, a powerful pro-life message simply stated to millions of viewers during a nationally broadcast football game. And what a powerful story. J.K. Dobbins' mom becoming pregnant with him when she was just 18 years old, going to the doctor, contemplating abortion, and changing her mind. And that baby turned out to be J.K. Dobbins, one of the best football players in the country. And that is something to celebrate and to talk about. And here's the most important thing, is that so often in this debate, people will say potential life. But what we know is it's not a potential life. The unborn are a human life with potential. And while not everyone grows up to be a star football player, every child has value even before they are born. And every child has that potential, not to be a potential life, but they are a life with potential. And circumstances or assumptions should never determine the value or potential of that human being's life. And certainly J.K. Dobbins' story and his mother's story is a powerful reminder of that. And just simply relaying that story over the air during the broadcast of that football game really, I think, has the potential to have a huge impact on people who heard that. But of course, when this happened, pro-abortion proponents and advocates were outraged that an announcer, a broadcaster, would dare to bring that up on air, even though it's a wonderful, true story about the star player of the game. And it's certainly somewhat confounding as to why someone would be outraged at such a heartening, positive story. But it really shows that even such a simple, positive story like that undermines their side and their entire argument, that we can't even shed light or talk about a mother choosing life for her son who goes on to become a star football player, because it sends a message that all human life, even in the womb, has value, and we should allow those human beings to reach their God-given potential. And I've heard it said that the truth never hurts a cause that is just. So if the pro-choice movement is so just and so right, then why would a true story about a star football player and his mom, why would that hurt their cause? It's because the story reveals that abortion doesn't just impact one person. There is a second life involved, the preborn baby. And that story is just points to the simple fact that if Dobbins' mother had chosen abortion, he wouldn't be the star football player he is today because his life would have ended. And again, regardless of whether or not he ever stepped foot on a football field, his life has value. The pro-life argument is not utilitarian. Unborn babies shouldn't be protected only because they might be successful and contribute to society in profound ways as adults. Every life is infinitely valuable, irrespective of what they may or may not contribute to society. Yet, it certainly is saddening to consider how many other star athletes or doctors or surgeons or researchers or scholars and professors that we have lost due to abortion. And this should serve as another reminder as to why it is so essential that Christians and people of faith take a stand on this issue and speak publicly, because the unborn children cannot beg for justice and mercy or speak for themselves. So it's the duty of the born to speak for them. And when these stories pop up, we need to share them and talk about them, because this is how we can start changing hearts and minds. In fact, it's stories like this that actually change the mind of the president on abortion. In an interview that President Trump gave with David Brody on CBN, President Trump said, "I'm pro-life, but I changed my view a number of years ago. One of the reasons I changed, one of the primary reasons, a friend of mine's wife was pregnant. She was pregnant and he didn't really want the baby, and he was telling me the story. He was crying, and as he was telling me the story, he ends up having the baby, and the baby is the apple of his eye. It's the greatest thing that's ever happened to him, and here was a baby that wasn't going to be let into life." The interviewer followed up by asking the president whether those stories changed his view on abortion, to which President Trump replied, "That changed my view as to abortion. Absolutely, yes." So we should all celebrate and be thankful that Maya chose life for her son, J.K. Dobbins. And let's continue to pray that this story and stories like it continue to reach people, because I believe it's possible that the story of J.K. Dobbins, his mother's miracle baby, and others like it, simply stated over the course of several seconds on a live football broadcast, will save more lives than anyone might have imagined. But that can't happen if people don't have the courage to share the truth. Now, as I mentioned at the top of the show, the United States Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recently released their abortion surveillance report. This is a report that they publish every year, which details as much as possible what abortion currently looks like in the United States. And while there is a lot of good news out of this study and report, there are many concerning trends as well, and it's important to know and understand what's in this report so that we know what it means for Americans and for the pro-life cause. So we're going to dive into this a little bit and share some of the most important details, and we're going to start with the good news, which is that overall, abortion numbers are continuing to decline. In fact, abortions are down by 24% nationally since 2005. So this is obviously a positive trend and great news for pro-life supporters. The report also revealed that abortion is generally decreasing in what are typically pro-abortion states like Colorado and New York, while unfortunately it is increasing in some states that are regarded as pro-life states like Alabama, Georgia, and Missouri. So that's why it's really important that those states like Alabama and Georgia and Missouri are also passing some of the strongest pro-life laws in the country that were waged very publicly earlier this year, and although they passed, have not been allowed to take effect. Some other good news that stands out in the report is that there are fewer teenagers and young women having abortions or an unwanted pregnancy at all. But perhaps the most troubling bit of news is the use of abortion pills, also known as a chemical or medical abortion, is becoming increasingly popular. According to the report, in the first 8 weeks of pregnancy, use of the abortion pill grew by 18%. And between 9 and 13 weeks, it grew by a staggering 91%. The use of the abortion pill later in pregnancy is especially concerning, since doctors have determined it is most effective and safe for the mother by the 10th week of pregnancy. That women are prescribed it afterwards, in some cases up to the 21 weeks of pregnancy, and increasing the chance of an incomplete abortion and serious health complications could be considered medically negligent. This is an alarming trend, and it's true in Nebraska as well, where now close to 60% of all abortions are done medically or chemically by use of the abortion pill. And that's why it was so important that state senators earlier this year passed new legislation that Nebraska Family Alliance advocated for with other pro-life groups to provide information to women when they are prescribed the abortion pill about abortion pill reversal, which gives women a second opportunity to choose life and help save their child from a medication abortion even after taking the first pill. And in fact, we now know that more than 900 babies have been saved nationally because a mother changed her mind after starting a chemical abortion and began the reversal process after taking the abortion pill and saved her child's life. And that's why it's important to know what's in these reports and what's actually taking place and how abortions are being performed so that we can respond to it, so that policymakers and citizens and families know how to think about this issue, how to talk about it, and how to help reduce the number of abortions that are taking place. So although abortion numbers are down overall nationally, the fight for life is far from over. There were still 623,471 abortions last year. It's an improvement from previous years, no doubt, but that is an absolutely staggering number to think about and to try to comprehend. Over 600,000, just the loss of innocent life is heartbreaking, and it should inspire all of us to continue fighting for life and to advocate for truth and justice. And, you know, looking at these reports and seeing some of these numbers, despite the decrease and drop in the number of abortions, it can still be really overwhelming and discouraging to see. But I think especially looking back over this past year and thinking through some things that happened in 2019, there's a lot to be thankful for and encouraged by, and some things and developments that we can point to that shows progress. So, for example, some pro-life news that we should be thankful for this year, the first one that comes to mind was the reaction and blowback across the country to what happened this year in New York and Virginia, with the New York legislature passing an abortion up until birth bill, followed by the shocking and fanticide comments made by Virginia's governor, which resulted in an outpouring of pro-life support across the country. And I think it also helped move people off of the fence about abortion across the country. People were outraged, and much of the pro-life legislation passed this year was in reaction to what happened in New York and Virginia. And that's really positive. Obviously, what New York did was awful, and the comments that the Virginia governor made were absolutely despicable. That a child who is born alive after surviving an abortion should just be left on the table while they decide what to do with it, if the child should be cared for or not, or just simply left there to die. But out of that evil, we saw some good come from that, including a number of states that I mentioned passing heartbeat bills to protect unborn babies. That was some of the most aggressive pro-life legislation that we've seen passed in the country. Even though it hasn't gone into effect yet, it sends a pretty powerful message that this issue is far from settled and that states are going to continue to do whatever they possibly can to protect unborn human life. We also saw out of these events come the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, introduced by Senator Sass and the United States Senate. And again, although it wasn't able to pass, it helped demonstrate that we do have elected officials who care deeply about these issues and about protecting human life. And it really helped expose a lot of the extremism on the left on this issue, that we can't even pass a law simply requiring care be provided to infants who are born alive and survive an abortion. That got people's attention, and we got a record vote in the United States Senate on that issue, on that bill, and that's a good thing. Planned Parenthood, they lost $60 million in federal taxpayer money this year because of the new Title X funding requirements that were actually enforced properly by the Trump administration. Planned Parenthood lost the $60 million in taxpayer money because they refused to separate their actual Title X healthcare practices from their abortion services. It was a sign to the country that, contrary to popular belief, they will continue to put abortion over the primary care services that other clinics who don't provide abortions do provide and should be receiving that money instead. So we're actually seeing those funds now, instead of going to Planned Parenthood, the nation's largest abortion provider, going to other clinics who actually provide real health care. That's good news. Taxpayer money should never subsidize the abortion industry. And then we saw really incredible events happen for the first time, like what Focus on the Family did with their Alive from New York event, where they showed a live 4D ultrasound on the jumbo screens in Times Square in New York, which was witnessed by 20,000 people in person and hundreds of thousands watching on a live stream around the world. That's a big deal. This is all positive news that should be celebrated, but really we're just getting started. 2020 is going to be a huge year, and at Nebraska Family Alliance, we are committed to advancing the pro-life movement. We are dedicated to protecting human life from conception to natural death because we recognize every human life is a precious gift created in the image of God. We are seeking to build a culture of life that protects and affirms the sanctity of human life. Because as science and technology have improved, we're able to see what we inherently know, that a baby is a life worth protecting at all stages of development. And pro-life people aren't just anti-abortion. We're committed to supporting life in all its forms: children in foster care, adoptive families, pregnant women, newborns, and their mothers. Creating a culture of life in Nebraska is critical to protecting the most vulnerable members of our society, and it's central to the mission of Nebraska Family Alliance, and we hope that you will join us in that mission. You can learn more about it at our website, nebraskafamilyalliance.org. And in talking a lot today about the issue of life and abortion, I want to close the show by talking about the central question here, which is, when does life begin? Does life begin at conception, or does life start at some point before or after conception? When life begins is a serious question asked by many people. And because the pro-choice versus pro-life debate often hinges on this very question, Christians need to be prepared to answer it. And thankfully, our friends at the Colson Center for Christian Worldview have produced a new short video as part of their What Would You Say video series, and it provides a clear, concise answer to this question. And so the next time you're asked, when does life begin, here are some things to remember.
You're in a conversation about abortion, and someone says, human life doesn't begin at conception. It's just a clump of cells. What would you say? It's easy to say life doesn't begin at conception because an embryo doesn't look like what we think people should look like. But we know human life begins at some point. Here are a few things to remember while you think about when that is. First, life doesn't begin at birth. It isn't logical to say life begins at birth because that would suggest that the baby inside the womb one day prior to birth wasn't alive. it's not reasonable to say an individual who is alive at birth is not alive one day prior to birth. The only difference is where they are. So we know life does not begin at birth. Second, life doesn't begin at viability. Many argue that human life begins once a baby can survive on her own outside the womb. But there are problems with this argument too. After all, viability changes based on technology. Today, babies can be born at 24 weeks and survive. But 200 years ago, that wasn't possible. Viability is also determined based on where you are born. Wealthy nations make things possible for babies that wouldn't be possible in a poorer country. Does that mean a 24-week baby in the United States is more alive than a 24-week baby in the jungles of the Congo? Of course not. So life must be determined by something other than viability. Third, life does not begin with the heartbeat. We know that living things only come from other living things. It wouldn't be possible then for the embryo to be non-living for the first few weeks and suddenly spring into life. So the embryo has to be alive prior to the heartbeat. Does this mean that we can be alive without a heartbeat? Yes. That's actually what makes the newly conceived embryo more functionally impressive than a born person. The embryo has an ability to live, grow, and move through the stages of human development without the feature you and I need to continue our growth and development. If life doesn't begin at birth, viability, or heartbeat, when does it begin? Life begins at conception, fertilization. At fertilization, a living mother and father give life to a whole living organism, genetically distinct from his or her mother and father. No, the embryo doesn't look like everyone else, but aren't we past the idea that someone has to look a certain way before they are considered human? Think of it like a Polaroid picture. Initially, all you will see are black smudge marks. The moment the photo is taken, however, the image is captured. It just needs time to develop. The same is true for you and me. The moment of sperm egg fusion, we, in our uniqueness from our parents, began to exist. We just needed time to develop. Let's review. Life doesn't begin at birth, because that suggests you aren't alive the day before birth. Life doesn't begin at viability, because viability depends on where you were born and when. Life doesn't begin at the heartbeat either, because that requires you to believe the heartbeat emerged from someone that isn't alive. So we're left with one option. Life begins at conception, at fertilization. It's what science tells us and logic requires us to acknowledge. For What Would You Say? I'm Stephanie Gray.
That's a great video with some important truths that everyone should know, and you can watch it and others like it at whatwouldyousay.org. As always, for more information on how you can help advance family, freedom, and life in Nebraska, you can visit our website, nebraskafamilyalliance.org. That's all the time we have for this week. I'm your host, Nate Groz, Policy Director for the Nebraska Family Alliance, hoping you'll join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.